Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to this midweek edition of the La Liga Lowdown podcast. My name's Tom Harris, I'm your host today, and I'm very excited to be joined by La Liga Lowdown's very own Valencianista, and that is, of course, Mr. Paco Pollet. Paco, we've actually got a bit of snow up here in Manchester. How are things going in Valencia? Probably a bit warmer, I assume.
Yeah, warmer, but not, you know, the best weather over here. Very, very windy days, the last couple of days over here, and actually pretty cold with, as I said, wind. Awful, awful weather, especially if we compare to what we had only a couple of days ago, which was like 20 degrees sunny Valencia in January, which is weird, but it's obviously very, very welcome.
Yeah, the climate is unpredictable as a football at the moment. We'll get into some of the recent results, and we're going to start today's podcast. You know, we've been speaking a lot about, obviously, the Supercopa and what an amazing result that was for Barcelona in the final. And Sam and Roman on the podcast on Monday did an excellent job of dissecting and analysing the game. But I thought it might be useful just to revisit that, Paco, because we've had a couple of days that the dust has settled and we all got very excited by that Barcelona performance. But looking at Real Madrid, actually, I mean, they're playing in the Copa del Rey away at Villarreal on Thursday. They lost to Villarreal at the Estadio de la Cerámica just last weekend. And of course, they've flown all the way out to Saudi Arabia. They played 120 minutes against Valencia, a demoralizing defeat against Barcelona. And now they've got a very tough game in the Copa ahead of a very tough game away at San Mamés on the weekend. So all action for Real Madrid. If you're Carlo Ancelotti in this position, how do you face this next game against Villarreal? Do you go all out and do you try and play your way out of this bad form, or do you perhaps try and give those players some rest who have played so much football over the last couple of weeks?
Well, I think that he, as an experienced veteran manager, he obviously knows what to do, especially when, you know, training and managing a champion side as Real Madrid. I was, you know, quite amused in the last couple of days while reading social media, and some Real Madrid fans, especially the younger ones, you know, they have been dismissing the current squad and thinking about the good old days, which are 2015, you know, only 8 years ago. And I think that they are not very self-aware, or possibly not aware enough of how incredible is what Real Madrid has been delivering the last couple of seasons. Because even with them being far from the greatest team ever, football-wise, they got the job done every single time, which is some kind of, you know, amazing kind of football voodoo going on, always being able to always overcome the odds, always, you know, turn the tide away from them and trying to, you know, bounce back after incredible scorelines. That kind of mentality isn't really dissolved and disappear from one day to the next. And that's why I think that Real Madrid, even after the bump on the road, which was the Super Cup final in Saudi Arabia, I think that they're going to bounce back. Possibly not immediately, but, you know, they'll come along. Maybe in the next few games, there are some doubts here and there. Obviously, playing against Villarreal isn't doing them a favor, because Villarreal have been pretty strong lately, even though they disappointed me last weekend. I expected them to win, and they drew their game. But, you know, it seems that the Quique Setién playstyle has finally being accepted by the squad, and that's why Villarreal are a very dangerous team to face nowadays. But I shouldn't be really worried about Real Madrid if I were a Real Madrid fan, which I am not, obviously, because I think that they will, you know, bounce back from this mishap, and I think that especially when eyeing the you know, their games against Liverpool further along the road, I believe it's only less than 1 month away, those two games. I think that they are going to get back their confidence, their mentality. The players who are not really 100% in a physical level, they are going to, you know, recover pretty fast in the next few weeks. So in that sense, I think it's not going to really have a big impact on Real Madrid. But it's true that Barca got away from this game with a lot of strength. You know, they have, their backbone has been severely strengthened by this kind of result, especially the way they were able to pull it off.
Yeah, I mean, Real Madrid, the great sufferers really in La Liga. You know, they've won a lot of titles by suffering and winning games late on or coming back from the brink, as you said. But it was Barcelona who did that last weekend in La Liga when they beat Atletico Madrid. They played a more expansive game against Real Betis and tried to stretch a pitch, and then they really turned on the style against Real Madrid. And I think that is quite ominous for the rest of the league, that they can win in three different ways in three games, you know, within the space of a week, even after 17 of their players going to the World Cup, all of this travelling and these three big games. So, yeah, going to be a psychological battle, I think, until the end, this title race. And of course, there are 3 points in it. Barcelona are 3 points ahead at the moment. And we'll get on to looking at some of the games this weekend a bit later on in the podcast. But just while we're still on the Supercopa, Paco, obviously your team, Valencia, were out there as well. They were unfortunate, really, I think, to lose on penalties to Real Madrid. How would you assess their performance out in Saudi Arabia? Because I know Mark Clark was a big fan of Valencia's performance in that semi-final.
Well, most of you guys were able to see why Gattuso slotted in so well at the beginning of the season, especially amongst the fan base, because of how Valencia managed to more or less juggle that kind of grittiness that they used to have under José Bordalás with a new, more, you know, attractive play style, especially with the ball on their feet, with ball possession, and they were able to dispute that percentage against Real Madrid in their game. And overall, I think that Valencia have been able to sustain most of their performance so far on the hands of Mamardashvili and on the feet of Edinson Cavani. And that's the difference which can be really marked inside the boxes. And that's, in modern football, that's where the difference are made nowadays, because most of the teams are physically well prepared. They have plenty of, you know, tactics that they can juggle in any single game. They can be more defensive, more offensive. They can pressure high, midfield, or at the back. I don't know. Most of them have that kind of variables, as we call them in Spanish. But the main difference can be seen inside the box when defending with your goalkeeper and when attacking with your point striker, with your number nine. And unfortunately for Valencia, Cavani didn't score, but his game was massive. You know, he played incredibly well the whole game. And in that sense, Mamardashvili was massive too, except for the penalty shootout, you know, which is quite unfortunate, because I don't know what kind of jinx is working on here, but Mamardashvili has been very, you know, secure for most of his Valencia career so far. He has been very reliable under the sticks, but whenever a penalty comes around, he just doesn't have that kind of ability or that kind of spider sense or sixth sense. I think that he misses the mark in that area of expertise, and unfortunately Valencia lost in the penalty shootout because of that. But overall, I think that plenty of Valencia fans were happy for the development of the squad and the way they played. But I sense some kind of complacent attitude from some of the fans, because we have lowered the bar so much that we can become, you know, even happy for this kind of performances, when back in the day, and I'm not talking like 20 years ago, I'm talking about 8, 9, 10 years ago, if Valencia lost this kind of semi-final, fans would be fuming. You know, they would be fuming, because Valencia used to be a heavyweight a heavyweight contender for these kind of trophies and even win them. You know, Valencia used to win them back in 2002, 2004. They were championship contenders in La Liga. They were championship contenders in Copa del Rey and obviously in the Super Cup. So unfortunately, the bar has been lowered so much by Peter Lim that plenty of fans are happy for the showcase and obviously not for the outcome. And I think that the kind of mentality will have to be, you know, changed in a way if Valencia expect to be great once again someday in the future.
Well, we are in January, Paco. Is there any news potentially coming out of Valencia?
Well, when we are recording this show, only a few hours ago, Gennaro Gattuso was in the press conference and he said that he had, brought up to the club on the sports direction and even Peter Lim over 100 names, you know, in the market, and that he had overseen with the sports director 57 names in the last 57 days, which is amazing. But at the same time, it's not amazing that for so many names, Valencia have made the incredible and amazing amount of zero signings so far. Because actually, whenever you expect to achieve a transfer, you need the money, you know, because this is not the monopoly, unfortunately, and Valencia needs some cash in that sense. And Peter Lim isn't ready to splurge cash. Actually, he isn't ready to spend any cash at all. So Valencia has a very, very limited market in that sense. Plenty of rumors here and there. In the last few days, Janusaj's agent, which is the same agent who offered last summer Justin Kluivert, and Valencia made the signing on loan from Rome. His agent, Janusaj's agent, offered the player to Valencia. Unfortunately, the talks are more or less in a stalemate position because Sevilla expects Valencia to pay for half of his salary, and Valencia aren't, you know, keen on that, and the salary is quite high. But, you know, if we leave that aside, many names, Pellistri from Manchester United, the striker who played only a few days ago with the team. He's very young. He needs minutes. He could be a potential signing on loan. I don't know. Plenty of names for Valencia, but unfortunately for Gattuso, who really, really needs their reinforcements, none of them are here already, which, by the way, they should be.
Well, I've got my fingers crossed for you, Paco. Hopefully we'll see some incomings in the next couple
of days. If anything comes around, it will happen in the 30th, 31st. Which is, you know, standard Meritons Valencia procedure.
Yeah, well, I mean, aside from Valencia, we have seen some transfer activity this week, and quite refreshing actually to see some incomings, because we've obviously seen a lot of players leave La Liga in the last couple of days. We've seen Real Betis replace one of our outgoings, Alex Moreno, obviously off to Aston Villa, and Abner Vinicius has came in from Brazil, the third Vinicius, I believe, now in La Liga.
Yeah, Vinicius Tanque also in last season, he was playing for Atletico Baleares. He played against Valencia. Vinicius Tanque, which is obviously Vinicius Tank, which is quite an hilarious name, yes.
Yeah, no, another piece of business as well was Getafe re-picking up Gonzalo Villar, and I know you're...
Great move, in my view, yeah. Mm. Great move. I think Gonzalo Villar is a massive talent, and unfortunately he didn't have as many chances as he should last season under Quique Sánchez Flores, because he really needed that kind of grittiness to plunge the team from the depth of the depths of the standings. But this season with Quique and Getafe being, you know, mid-table, more or less not suffering as much as last year, I think that he might have more chances to shine with Getafe, as Quique Sánchez Flores really knows him well. And obviously he has pressured the Getafe to achieve once again the player on loan from Rome, I believe.
Yeah, no, very interesting to see how he does. But probably one of my most, you know, interesting transfers is Girona. They picked up 25-year-old Viktor Sigankov today. A man with 43 international caps for Ukraine, 94 goals and 64 assists in around 200 full games in Ukraine for Dinamo Kiev. And we've seen him score against Barcelona in the Champions League. We've seen him score against Spain for Ukraine as well. And you know, when you consider, obviously, it's not a simple comparison to make, but Mudrić going to Chelsea for 90 million. Yeah. And this man, you know, seems to be of a similar kind of output for five going to Girona. It's a really ambitious signing, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so, because I think that the Eastern markets, especially as the, you know, all of the ongoing war between Russia and Ukraine and all of the, you know, military conflict over there, I think it's become some sort of window of opportunity for some sides, as, for example, Dynamo Kyiv. Aren't really in the mood to be a regular football club because of the obvious context that they have been forced to be living upon. And that's why, for example, Mudrik's signing has been made by Chelsea for an humongous fee. I believe that it's a very, very overpaid signing. That's only my opinion. But in this case, I think that Girona obviously eyed for something different in front, because I think that has been one of their biggest issues this season, that they need to finish the play. They need goals, which is ultimately what I was talking about earlier with Edinson Cavani in Valencia. And obviously Sigankov has this kind of gravitas surrounding him. He's like the, as we say in Spanish, remataría una lavadora. He can finish if you make a cross, and instead of sending him a ball, you send a washing machine, he would definitely head home the washing machine. He's that kind of player who is able to, you know, try to finish in any kind of position all of the plays. And I think that he can bring exciting stuff to Girona. Obviously, there's Manchester City behind. Everyone knows the kind of links that are permeating the relationships between Girona and Manchester City. But at the end of the day, this is a huge signing for Girona, a side who, at least on paper, shouldn't be able to make this kind of signings, but they actually do. And I think they have a very, very interesting squad overall, a very well-rounded team, and that's why they really aren't suffering as much as they should this season, because they are playing attractive football, they are signing interesting players, and they have a very focused mentality. So yeah, overall, I think this kind of player, Sigankov, can you know, splash some waves around in the remaining 6 months of competition.
And of course, we're hoping that he's not a replacement for Tati Castellanos, rather, you know, some support for him up front. But yeah, we're very excited to potentially see some of these players in game week 18. And that's what we're going to preview after the break. So stick around, don't go anywhere, and we will be back very, very shortly to look ahead to the big games this weekend.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome back to part two of the La Liga Lowdown podcast, our midweek edition. I'm here again with Paco Pollet and we're going to move on to talk about this weekend's fixtures. But first, we have to look back at a fixture which fell after our match day 17 recap pod. So Sam and Roman weren't able to talk about it, but it was a big, big game and it was Cadiz 1, Elche 1, a huge, huge game at the bottom of the table. And, you know, open the scoring, a sensational strike from Brian Ocampo, one of the goals of the season, his first goal in Spanish football. Actually, just the seventh time he's taken a shot while he's been here in Spain. And if he can hit the ball that well, you're wondering why he's not been shooting a bit more often. But yeah, absolutely brilliant. And then Ezequiel Ponce in the 81st minute was the man who flicked in an equaliser with a header. Intriguingly, from a Lautaro Blanco cross, and that was his 10th cross of the game, and he only came on at half-time, so he was a prolific creator down the left-hand side of the pitch. But yeah, Elche still rock bottom, of course, 17 games, zero wins, but they picked up a point here towards the end. And
there was some controversy surrounding that equalising goal, wasn't there, Paco?
Yeah, because obviously I think that we shouldn't really debate this as much as some listeners might expect. I think that it's pretty clear that the Elche's goal was in an offside position, and it should have been ruled out. That was, 100% evidence on the spot. Seconds after the goal was scored, and it, amazingly, the people in the VAR and the referee in the VAR were watching another channel on the TV. I don't know if they were watching a Netflix show. I don't know, but they really missed that play, and they dropped the ball on disallowing the goal, which is huge for Elche because they picked up a point in a game that they should have lost, and also massive for Cadiz in a negative way because they had, they had pocketed the 3 points and they were out of relegation spots, and suddenly they only had to comply with only one. And actually, Cadiz have challenged the overall the game. And they have, and I'm reading here the statement that they released, they are challenging the game as a consequence of an unfortunate and negligent performance of the refereeing body, specifically the refers and the referee on the VAR room, and that Cadiz were severely, negatively affected, and that they are going to, try to use all of their legal resources to take action and try to challenge the game and try that the game should be restarted from the 81st minute onwards, to play the last 9 minutes, because they believe that the referee's mistake and the VAR was so massive that it's actually going against the actual competition. You know, I think it's very far-fetched. Nothing is going to happen. You know, it would be very, very, very strange that legally they would have some kind of support to this claim, but it just speaks volumes about how big what was the mistake and how negative, what's a negative impact it has had against Cadiz. By the way, the referee inside the VAR room, who was in charge of watching the screen, was Iglesias Villanueva, who back in the day was relegated from refereeing in La Liga to just, squeezed into that VAR room and try to not generate any kind of complaints. Well, he did fail in this sense. And there has been also plenty of drama with all of the referee committees, the referee bodies. And a statement has been released earlier today talking about that. It was a mistake, but and after the but comes everything else, they are complying La Liga to start using the semi-automatic offside system, which was, by the way, tested on the Super Cup in Saudi Arabia, and it worked more or less pretty on point, especially in that Barça Betis game. I remember it was an offside could it be Lewandowski, by like a matter of millimeters. I don't know. But the referees, instead of being apologizing and trying to improve and all of that. No, they said that, okay, it was a mistake, but La Liga should try to avoid this kind of stuff by using the semi-automatic offside system. This isn't going to end well. Unfortunately, Cadiz, I think that they are, you know, they have the right to try to use up all of their legal resources to defend their interests. But I think that the end score is going to remain 1-1. Elche don't really, you know, they don't really change their fate so far, because they only have, I believe it's 6 points, they're bottom of the standings, 5 points, sorry. And yeah, unfortunately for Cadiz, possibly they deserve the win, but the 1-1 is going to remain in the books forever.
Yeah, you were talking about washing machines before. We're talking about fridges now with the referees, as they like to say in Spain,
back in
the fridge. And we've already seen Mateo Lahoz dropped from a game week, and I think we might see a few more, you know,
towards
the end of the season.
Yeah, and I think that Mateo Lahoz is actually coming back in the next few days. I don't know if this week will happen, because we are only a few hours away from knowing the referees being appointed to the games this weekend. But I think Mateo will be back before January finishes. But yeah, definitely a couple of other referees are going to be spending quite a while inside the fridge over here.
Yeah, very controversial at the moment, the refereeing, but let's try and focus on the football for the last 5 minutes of today's episode. We've got some really, really tasty games coming up, and focusing on Cadiz still, they're, you know, travelling away to Sevilla this weekend, and what an absolutely huge game that is. Oh. You know, we had 19th versus 20th last weekend. We've now got 18th versus 19th this weekend. And, you know, Cadiz, if you look at their results, I mean, they were, as we mentioned, perhaps unlucky not to win last weekend, but they've actually only lost one game in their last six. They've beaten Atletico Madrid in that run. They've obviously beaten Valencia as well away from home. And the way Sevilla are playing at home, it was a real struggle to get their first home win of the season against Getafe last weekend. This could go either way, really, couldn't it?
Yeah, we have little time, so I think we can go straight to the point. Sevilla-Cadiz, sorry, is going to be the biggest game of the weekend, not only because of how many things are on the line for both sides. At the end of the day, we're talking about an Andalusian derby between two very, you know, historical sides, but also because of the atmosphere surrounding everything happening right now in Sevilla. You know, there's plenty of Sevilla fans, and especially those who are listening, I want to give them a little nudge. They are up in arms with all of the management, with all of the signings made by Monchi, who was mighty back in the day, and suddenly he doesn't really know how to make proper signings because all of them are failing lately, and especially against Pepe Castro, who is the Sevilla's president and who might be on his way out, because many, many Sevilla fans are asking him to resign from his position, and some kind of emergency board being set up in order to save Sevilla first from the relegation spots, and, you know, turning things upside down inside the club, because things are really, really not working lately in the last couple of seasons. So that game is definitely going to be my drama biggest game of the weekend, but I think we have plenty of others also to watch out for.
Yeah, 100%. Just quickly on Sevilla, they've actually confirmed the re-signing of Lucas Ocampos, who was obviously sent out to Ajax in the summer, and he's come back already in winter. Kind of, you know, real microcosm of Sevilla's transfer business and Sevilla's state at the moment. You know, what an incredible kind of episode that's been. So yeah, moving on to some of the other games, like you say, we have some really, really attractive ones. Top of the list for me is probably Rayo Vallecano versus Real Sociedad. Two of the most attractive teams to watch in football, particularly in Spanish football, particularly La Real, off the back of that really, really impressive win in the Basque Derby. And Mikel Oyarzabal as well, he started in the Copa del Rey this weekend as they beat Mallorca, so that's more encouraging news for them. But Rayo Vallecano, they won again away at Real Valladolid, and you know, you look at the table and they are in this race for the European places. They're only 2 points off the top four. So they're really, really in it, aren't they?
Yes, because of their latest run of games. You know, you only have to see how they have been performing lately to point out the greatness that Iraola is bringing to the table with Rayo Vallecano. They are sitting right now ninth, but only one win could allow them to climb up to the fourth spot. You know, only one game away from being a Champions League side. Whereas for Real Sociedad, they are right now in an absolute riotous run of games. I don't know if maybe Rayo Vallecano can be the team to stop them on their tracks, but you know, I saw for a while their game against Mallorca in Copa del Rey, and it wasn't brilliant, but they got the job done. Ultimately, Real Sociedad have won their four last La Liga games, and they have moved on to the quarterfinal in Copa del Rey. So at this point in the season, possibly they are the side who are even overperforming. I'm not going to say performing the best, even overperforming the best from all of La Liga sides. So in that sense, I think it's going to be a great game overall.
And of course, La Real topping their Europa League group as well and through to the knockout rounds of that competition too. So really, really strong season so far for Real Sociedad, and fingers crossed they can keep that up. Some more games this weekend, and we have to touch on that title race. And as we mentioned before, Real Madrid travelling to San Mamés to take on Athletic Club, and this has a lot riding on it. Athletic Club, probably one of the hardest places to go in La Liga just because of the atmosphere, and we've seen a lot of big teams stumble there in the past. Both of these sides on a bit of a low, as we said, Athletic Club losing the derby, Real Madrid losing the Clásico. I think this one could be all guns blazing as well, don't you?
Yeah, because I think that Ernesto Valverde is one of the greatest Spanish managers nowadays. I think that his career has been outstanding, and he has succeeded in almost all of the sides where he has coached. And the gaffer in this current run as Athletic's manager, I think that he's bringing different stuff to the table. He doesn't have that kind of gung-ho attitude that he used to have when, for example, he coached Valencia 10 years ago or other adventures, but he's a great, great coach. And I think that the duel in the sidelines is going to be great to watch, as the, you know, Raul García against the world, which is an obvious classic in any kind of game between Athletic and Real Madrid. Let's see what kind of, you know, alternatives Ancelotti brings to the table in order to change the mood after the defeat in the Super Cup. But remember that many of Real Madrid's big defeats in the last 5-10 years have happened actually in San Mamés. Because of what you said, the atmosphere, the rowdiness, the grittiness, and the kind of attitude which Athletic Club brings anytime they face one of the big three teams, Real Madrid, Barça, or Atletico Madrid.
And then, of course, Barcelona taking on Getafe at Camp Nou. Barcelona, of course, 3 points clear, as we've said, and an opportunity to stretch that lead should Real Madrid drop any points against a Getafe side who, as we mentioned before, just struggling to get going. They lost last week to Espanyol by 2-1, but they did score an incredible goal. Enes Unal is clearly the danger man for this team, and on their day, Getafe can sit back and frustrate you, but looking at this, you know, you have to say Barcelona are favourites, don't you?
No, I think that unfortunately for Getafe, at this point they are in a battle which is absolutely different to what Barca are playing right now. I think that Barca will bring the momentum with them from the Super Cup win, and that's why I believe they will be far superior in this game. But overall, Getafe's season has been not really the most, I would say, the most consistent, because they have been capable of pulling off amazing results and at the same time losing games that they had absolutely under control. So I don't know what is happening over there. I'm sure that Quique Sánchez Flores will be working intensely on trying to solve it. But overall, Barca should, you know, grab a relatively easy win if they are able to play at least 50-60% of the level that they showed against Real Madrid.
Fantastic. Well, thanks very much for coming on today, Paco, and sharing your thoughts with us. It's been an absolute pleasure, as always. Make sure, listeners, to follow us at La Liga Lowdown on Twitter. We have our January transfer thread on there, which is ever-growing. Even as we're talking now, there's news ticking through, so there will always be extra things to see on there. And also, make sure to have a look at our Substack. That's llonline.substack.com, where we have free content every day in the form of short articles by our experts. That's all for today's episode. It's been a pleasure, and we'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.